Welcome to the Badass Confidence Coach Podcast, where I'm your personal trainer for your mind. I am Anna Marcoline, therapist, life coach, and 20-year triathlete. At 55 years old, I've been there and done that, evolving into a successful entrepreneur along the way while being a mom of five. This show is for high-achieving women and men ready to step into their full potential. If you're craving confidence, success, and ready to break through your barriers, you're in the right place. Unlike therapy, which I love, by the way, we're all about action here. Join me as we dive deep into the struggles that we all face. Loneliness, mindset battles, anxiety, and more. Plus, I'll be joined by special guests and my husband, Tim, adding a personal touch to our conversations. Welcome. Okay, this is part two of the episode that Tim and I did a couple of weeks ago on how to use the big five personality traits, or actually what they are. So the first one was on what they are. Today is on how to use them. So really for personal development, for improvement in your personal life as well as your professional life.
Okay.
All right. So we're getting into it. So
give it a go.
I mean, this is really, truly, this is like a masterclass. So I know that you said that before, but when I was going over my notes for today, I'm thinking this really is a masterclass. I go to these classes to advance my coaching. So if you all are not driving or you're not outside walking or running, and even if you are, come back and take notes on this, play it back and take notes, because this is some really good stuff. I work with my clients on a lot of this. For them who are, you know, working with me one-on-one, it's very niche and dialed into their life. And this is some really good information for all of you. Okay, so let's go through it. So what are the big five personality traits? Let's go through them again in case you just don't remember from last time. So they are openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Ocean for short, O-C-E-A-N.
Seriously.
So remember that.
Ocean for short.
Ocean.
Okay.
Openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neroticism. All right.
Can I come up with a different
Already,
word?
Here we go.
I'm going to come up with a different word.
That's what it is.
It is, but it could be something else. I'll think about it. Okay. Keep going.
All right. So number one, when you're thinking about these big five personality traits and how you're going to use them to upgrade your life, you first need to do an assessment. So you first need to spend some time really looking through yourself, you know, going and doing a little bit of an inventory. Okay, so let's start. Number one, openness. So this is your openness to new experiences. Now, I want you to evaluate what is your willingness to experience new ideas, creative endeavors, and really think about new values. Are you open to new experiences? Or are you someone who really prefers routine? Okay. So there's no judgment here. Don't go into a place of judgment. Just really think about it and answer that question. Am I open to new experiences? And, or am I open to, you know, do I prefer new routines? Am I open to a new routine, or do I prefer the routine that I have? Okay. Number one. Number two, this is conscientiousness. Now, this is your assessment. I want you to think about your level of organization, dependability, and discipline. If you remember last time, I talked about people. One of the great things about people who are really conscientious is that they tend to be very thoughtful people. That's a wonderful character trait. So assess that. You know, what's my level of thoughtfulness of others? Do you follow through on your commitments that you say you're going to do for somebody else, or what more importantly, you say to yourself about what you're going to do? Do you follow through? How well do you manage your time and your responsibilities? I think that you have a lot of improvement to do there, Tim.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that's what this was going to be today, but you know, I'm up for it.
Just because before we start recording, we were talking about time management responsibilities. No, I'm kind of joking. I'm kind of joking, but kind of not.
All right.
Okay.
I mean,
so think about that.
I was going to say this though. So we were talking about, you know, follow through and that type of thing. And you and I have talked about this before, about being the person that shows up for certain things. Like if somebody needs something, or somebody's in a bad bad way. I think there's a lot of us that are like up for the idea of that.
Yeah.
Right. Like we like the idea of, oh, I could be that person. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a group that's like, that just does it and they don't even think about it. They just go into action. So it's for them, it's action first. They think it as they're acting.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of it that just like thinks like, wow, that I could see myself actually doing that. And then that's where it stops.
And I think I'm in both camps. I mean, I'm not perfect with it. I have to work on being thoughtful in action. So I'm thinking about people all the time, but I'll admit I'm not always great with following through because I think I want to send somebody that nice text. I think I want to drop flowers off for somebody and I don't always follow through because I get, you know, whether it be the week that I'm having and I don't do it. I don't beat myself up about it. I throw myself grace because I think there's other areas of my life where I really do very well. But that's like when I do my own life audit, that's something that I know I want to improve is to really advance my conscientiousness in the way of thoughtfulness of others. And that's a great point of taking action because I think about people and I will text and I will, if you're in crisis, you and I are both the same. If someone that we know is in crisis, and I think a lot of you, the listeners, the same, we are there, like Johnny on the spot, we're there and we're doing. You know, that it's clear that there's a need for you. It's more like when it's not a crisis and you're just thinking about someone who you don't know what kind of day they're having. Maybe you know that they've been down, they've been going through a hard time with work, or maybe their marriage is suffering. Sending them a nice card or sometimes just texting them thoughtful words. So that's what I was saying. That's not hard for me, but you know, maybe going over there and bringing them coffee, taking action. So I'm not great at that.
Yeah.
So that's something to improve upon.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are like, let me know if there's anything you need.
And we
like,
talked about
call
that.
Call me. Right. Like, and then like, they're not going to actually call you.
We've talked about that many times here on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing this for 4 years. And I know that over the past 4 years, we've talked about this because it has made a huge impression on you and I when back in 16, you were diagnosed with cancer. And so Tim, you had a lymphoma diagnosis and had to go through, you know, 7 weeks of or 8 weeks of hellacious. Well, that was just the chemo.
8 months, actually.
Yeah, but it was terrible.
Who's counting?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was horrible chemo every month.
Yeah.
And you were really like out of commission.
Yeah.
And what we learned from our friends and our communities that we live in is people just moved into action. And I learned from them. And I thought I was pretty good at it. And I wasn't as good as them. Talk about, I mean, they got a meal chain going. They were dropping food off. They were just dropping food off. They weren't even ringing the doorbell because they didn't know how you were. They're texting, hey, something on the front porch, you know, hey, dropped off food. I mean, that was really amazing. It has made a massive impression, a lasting impression on us. So we talk about it. We'll always talk about it.
Totally.
The love and the care and the conscientiousness, the thoughtfulness, the amazing personality trait of these people.
Yeah.
Has made me want to better myself.
Yeah.
And I think you too.
I think it made me realize how bad I was at it before. Yeah.
And we're caring people.
Yeah. That's the part that's like confusing.
And in a crisis, we're there in a heartbeat, but it's, I don't know. And you're right, Tim. And we talked about this before. Let me know what I can do for you. And when people are in crisis, or even when they're not in crisis and they're down, people are not going to text somebody and say, hey, could you bring me some soup? Could you drive me to the airport?
Yeah.
Could you go pick up my kid from cheerleading? People are not, for the most part, going to do it. We need to be on the offensive and say, what do you need? How can I help? Do you need me to pick up Leah at cheerleading? I'm on it. I'm at this grocery store. What do you need? I'm here now. Let me get you something. And then sometimes we say, well, I would love maybe just like, all right, I'm getting you a rotisserie chicken and a bag salad. So easy, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay. So that's conscientiousness. Do the self-assessment on that. Do you follow through on your commitments? Do you manage your time well too? So that's a big one in here. And do you manage your responsibilities? Number three is extroversion. So think about what's my level of sociability? What's my energy that I put into it? And what's my level of assertiveness? Are you energized by social interactions with others, or do you prefer solitude? Now, there's no judgment here. This is just for you to take an assessment of yourself, okay? Many people are introverts. And actually, I think even more people are in the in-between, the ambiverts. The ambiverts are the people who are, they have extroversion and they have introversion. It's just for you to just look at yourself and look at where are you on that level of extroversion? How sociable am I? How much energy does it take to me? Do I get revved up by being around people? Or when I'm in a group of people or a networking event or a social event, does it deplete my energy and I have to go home and spend like 2 days alone? Many people have to do that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I see. So I'm thinking about myself, like I'm probably in that middle stage because I have moments where I'm probably both sides of it. Not extremely both sides, but like I have moments where I'm on both sides. Certainly.
Yeah. I've seen
I show both sides.
What about me?
I mean, you lean more on probably the extrovert side.
I think I'm a total classic extrovert.
For the most part. But behind the scenes, the B-roll stuff that nobody sees is you curled up on the couch wanting, quiet, peace, just little distraction. Nobody sees that stuff, but that actually does happen, right?
And I have noticed it. Yeah. So I've been told, I've taken the personality test. I'm a classic extrovert. And actually, Tim, you have tested too, and you're like me, which I couldn't believe. We both tested as classic extroverts. I never thought you were an extrovert. I thought you were an ambivert, and sometimes more towards an introvert because you're quieter and you're not as social. You're very friendly, right? But you're not always as outgoing as I am. But I have noticed as I've gotten older, I must refill my tank. I can be extroverted all day. I love talking to people. I mean, I could talk to a doorknob. I love to talk and love to curious about people.
Where did that come from?
I've always said that.
Doorknob.
Because I think someone said it to me one time. Someone said, Anna, you could talk to a wall. You could talk to a doorknob because I'm sociable.
Yeah.
But I've watched as the years have gone by that I can do that and I must, like I said, refuel my tank. And that's what the B-roll that people don't see is, for many of us, right? Many of us are this way that I got my comfy blanket, I'm watching a show and I do want quiet because I think I can't keep expending all the mental energy, because we're working. There are days sometimes I'm working, not proud of this, but I work 7 days a week. And then I've, got to take my time to myself and refuel, especially if I've been doing a lot of networking. It's a lot seeing clients and I love my clients. I love what I do and I have an amazing clientele and I love all of these individuals. And adding to that a week of networking meetings, maybe speaking engagements, I get exhausted. And so that's what I have to do. I've got to get my sleep. I got to work out. I got to eat well, but I got to just like not talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And that's really normal, I think, for a lot of people.
And I think that's the difference too, is that like when you have moments of being an extrovert, like your level of that is way higher than mine.
Yeah.
You roll that way and I'm a little bit of a up, but mostly it's rounded. Yours is like straight up, right? Yeah. And so that drains you. Because you live up in that world a lot. Yeah. I don't go to that world very often. I'll go there, but I won't go there as often as you do.
I'm just more curious about people than you.
Maybe. Maybe you are. And congratulations.
Did you like that snark right there? Did you like that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
Okay. Anyways, okay. Number four, we're going into agreeableness. Okay. So remember agreeableness. Think about your level of compassion for others and yourself, and think about your level of cooperativeness. Are you empathic and understanding, or are you more competitive and challenging in your interactions with others? Okay. No judgment. Again, this is something for you to do on your own, privately, maybe journaling or in your thoughts while you're listening to this episode, wherever you are. Think about it. Do you tend to be empathic of others and understanding and take time to put... So empathy is... The definition of empathy, for those of you who don't know, and those of you who do know, this is a reminder. This is not having sympathy for others. This is having empathy. Empathy is literally, well, not literally, figuratively putting yourself in someone else's shoes. It's putting yourself in their situation, walking a mile in their shoes, imagining what it would be like to be them. Okay. So some people are very empathic or empaths, and some are, you know, middle of the road, and some struggle with empathy. You know, I know that I've certainly thought about people in my life, wow, they really lack an empathy gene. Like they were not born with it. They'll be sympathetic of you. I'm sorry that that happened. And then they're moving on. Like they struggle with empathy. But when they struggle with empathy, I think they really struggle with deep understanding of others. And that's okay. That's okay. It's something to be aware of. Are you more competitive? Are you more of a person who likes challenges in your interactions with others?
Hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to say something, but
I don't know about you. I don't know if you're empathetic and understanding. I don't think you are to the degree that I am. That's why I think I'm a therapist. I'm an empath.
Exactly. I think that comes with what you do. What I do.
I do what I do because of, I think, the way I was wired, the way God made me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that you've seen it, Tim. It's not always a great thing because I sometimes can't shake things.
Oh, 100%.
I can't shake things I've heard. That's why I don't do as much trauma treatment as I used to. And that's why I burned out of two really great jobs that I had because I was worked in child abuse, substance use disorders, and child abuse, in maternal and child health. And then I worked in oncology for years and I loved that job. I loved working with the cancer patients and their families. And because I was always full steam ahead and, you know, I was doing what I ought not to have been doing. I had poor boundaries around my job because I had so much empathy and grew to love these patients. And then when they passed, I went to the funerals and I didn't tell my boss. I wasn't supposed to be doing that. I was taking time out to go to their funerals and it just did me in. And I've talked about this on here as well. I felt like I was sinking and I could not pull myself out of my empathy, which ran into burnout. And that's when I quit because I was talking about my own funeral a lot. I was thinking about death. Like it was pretty dark thoughts about death because I saw so much of it.
Yeah.
But that was empathy gone awry, you know, awry,
yeah,
so to speak. Right.
And I think that's kind of, so you as a person, you tend to do that. That's a pattern for you. Where you'll go into somewhere, and I mean, I'm not saying physically go, right, but mentally you'll go into something and you have a hard time turning around and getting out.
Like, well, that's why I can't watch certain series on television. You know, I can't watch certain shows. Yeah. If I think I'm going to get, I have got to protect my mental energy. And number one, for my clients, I must protect my mental energy. So I cannot, as an empath, really watch disturbing shows, documentaries. I love documentaries, but I have to limit it. Like I can't do 5 hours. I don't think it's good anyway. I mean, an hour a day streaming a show as a life coach, that's what I'd recommend for everybody. But there have been times where I've watched like 3 hours or something. And I'm like, this is not good for me because I won't be able to sleep well because I can't stop thinking about it.
Especially if it's intense.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, if it's like wild stuff.
And we're like, crying, both of us are like, oh, you know, it's a documentary, something very, usually very sad will shake me. You know that a little bit more. So you'll say to me now, you can't watch that.
Time's up for you.
Time's up. You gotta stop, right? Yeah. Right. Okay. So that's agreeableness. And number five in the big five personality traits in doing your own assessment is your level of neuroticism. So, you know, this is where you evaluate your emotional stability and your stress levels. Okay. So are you often anxious and upset, or are you pretty much a calm and resilient person? I think we know pretty clearly who's neurotic here of the two of us and who's not.
Totally. That's so obvious.
I'm the neurotic one. You're not the neurotic one.
There you go.
Tim is very calm and resilient. I'm resilient, but I get stressed and I run anxious. So I just had a conversation with a coaching client yesterday about this, about how we're both pretty anxious and neurotic. I said, you're neurotic. I mean, I've been seeing her for years. So we know each other very well. I said, you are really very neurotic. I said, but don't worry, I am too. And we both laughed because we are. She is and I am.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Once again, I'm always going to say this. There's no judgment around it. You know, it's just for you to really do the self-exploration and to look at your level of neuroticism. That's all we're doing right now, is looking at your level. Maybe you're highly anxious. Maybe you're, you know, you're not high. You get anxious. You know, you run worried and you get nervous about things, but not every day. You're not always anxious. Okay, so maybe you're low to mid level. All right, that's something to think about. Okay,
let me ask you. So is it safe to say? I don't want to assume it, and I don't want anybody else out there to assume it. So you're talking about. Again, we're talking about that, those waves, right? Like you're helping your client become aware of who they are in this context.
Right.
Right. And the level of where they currently go, right? Up or down. And then are you trying to coach them, or if it's therapy, you're trying to help them get to the point where they don't go as high as low and try and stay towards the middle for certain things?
Stay in the middle.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, and I think I said this last time. When I worked in psych, it was a great big deal when a patient would come in and they would say, "How are you doing today?" They'd say, "I'm okay."
Yeah.
That was like, okay, we're like, let's give a round of applause for that. I'm okay. It's like the good enough mother, the good enough worker, the good enough, whatever it is, you're good enough. It's in the middle. I'm okay. I'm horrible. I barely got here today. I don't know how I got out of bed. Everything is awful. I suck at this. I don't deserve to, you know, all the negative stuff, eating crappy, not sleeping, the early morning awakening, which is a sign of a major depressive disorder, or sleeping all the time, 12, 13, 14 hours. That's not good. Okay. So that's a low, low, low. And someone who's high, 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 I mean, clinically speaking, looking at bipolar, that's like a mania. That's a clinical diagnosis. I'm not talking about that for purposes of today's episode, you know, but here's the truth. Most of us don't have mountaintop experiences all the time. So if you think about you're climbing a mountain and you get to the top, if any of you have ever hiked and gotten to the peak of a mountain or a hill and you look out and you're like, this is amazing. This is beautiful. It's euphoric being up here. This is beautiful. I love this. Well, how many times in your life do you have that? That's not where life is. Well, I don't think we ought to expect that we are always going to have mountaintop experiences. They come few, they come far between. When you have them, embrace them, indulge yourself in them, enjoy them. But we don't live on the mountaintop. We tend to live kind of in the middle of the mountain. We don't always want to be down in the valley. So that will be, you know, figuratively speaking, the lows. We don't want you to be in the lows either, where woe is me, life sucks. You're like, you know, Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, who's, oh, you know, like who had like a dysthymia, truly. Eeyore, that cute little donkey, he had a mood disorder. He did. He had dysthymia.
Okay.
It was anhedonia. Anhedonia is a loss of joy in life. Yeah. He seemed to have a loss of joy in life. And the thing about Winnie the Pooh is amazing that book is that they all loved him anyway, and they all included Eeyore anyway, and they brought him everywhere with him. Come on, Eeyore, come on. So that's a side note. Just love that whole story, that whole book series. But so really think about life being you live halfway up the mountain, and halfway up the mountain is, it's okay. My life's okay.
You know, you could use that whole Winnie the Pooh thing. Like, if you think about the characters in Winnie the Pooh,
They represent
like exactly what we're talking about. Like Tigger was wild, right? That's you. You're Tigger.
That was me, Tigger. Right? And as a child, people would call me Tigger.
Well, so there you go.
I have ADHD. When I was a kid, you don't see the hyperness now. When I was a kid, unmedicated, I was hyper. I was Tigger. And there was Christopher Robin, and there was Winnie, and there was Piglet. And Eeyore.
Was there not an owl in this one?
And the owl.
What was the owl's name?
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember. So yeah, I have actually listened to talks where they have used the whole metaphor of Winnie the Pooh.
It makes sense.
The book series to talk about personalities and community and togetherness and being there for having each other's back. And I have heard Eeyore spoken about in that way, that they always, Eeyore was really the depressed person in the group, but everybody had his back.
Right.
And still included him, still called to come on, let's go.
Wasn't there a kangaroo? Rue.
Oh, yeah, Rue.
Rue.
Wow, Tim. I forgot about all those characters.
Anyways.
Okay. All right. So that's your self-assessment. All right. So you're going to assess yourself on your openness to experiences, your conscientiousness, your extroversion, your agreeableness, and your level of neuroticism. Okay. So based on what you all are going to say and how you rated and you're thinking about yourself in lieu of what I just said, now we're moving on to let's set goals. So let's set goals based on your assessment of yourself. Okay. So let's say you scored low on your openness. What I want you to try to do is introduce small changes to your routine or employ new hobbies to enhance creativity and openness to new experiences. Okay. So think about how can I make small changes to my routine? Maybe it's like I did years ago. I make my bed every morning. That's a small change to my routine to start to be, you wouldn't think this has anything to do with openness. This has a lot to do with openness. So it's open to something new. I would say 50 to 60% of the time, 10 plus years ago, I would not make the bed every morning. I got up after you because you would leave really early. And I remember you'd come home, the bed wasn't always made.
Right.
And probably for at least seven, 8 years now, I don't start my day until that bed is made. The only reason maybe why I wouldn't is because I'm sick or something, but I make that bed. So that's openness to a new routine, which is what I started when I started to meditate. And so making my bed and moving into meditation / prayer in the morning was something that I resisted for a long time. And it's been game changing for me in my life. And it's been game changing for me, not just in my personal, my spiritual life, my personal life. Believe it or not, everyone, it's been game-changing for me in my business, in my entrepreneurial side of my life. It's been game-changing. Making that bed and then going and sitting down, even though my mind is going, I am already going, what do I have to do today? What do I have to do today? Got to get in the shower. You know, got to look at these emails. Got to get ready for this or that. I sit my butt down and for 10 to 20 minutes, I will meditate and pray. Sometimes I'll do one or the other and I try to do both, 10 minutes of meditation, 10 minutes of prayer. Okay, so that's been game changing in so many different ways. So, you know, that's introducing a small change, which has brought huge dividends for me.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm trying to think. So I'm like, for me, I mean, the one thing that I do, which I didn't do before, now it's like almost every single morning. Is I'll go, so I make coffee or whatever. I get up. There's a whole list of things to do, right? But like the thing that I do for me personally, I'll go to YouTube. We joke. We call it YouTube University. It kind of is. I mean, there's so many things on there you can learn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You gotta be careful because there's some ding dongs out there too, but like there's a lot of stuff to be learned. Yeah. I will spend maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and I'll find something either on swimming or photography. And I have some go-to people that I'll seek out and just like listen to them talk about, I mean, for them, they're giving like a masterclass or they're giving tips on this or that, you know, how do you coach this or how do you fix this for a swimmer or for photography? How do you do this differently or do this better or whatever?
Right.
But I'll spend maybe 5 or 10 minutes and I'll just listen and kind of just sit there and just in a nice quiet spot. And it's like, I always walk away with like one thing, which is like, I've used that stuff,
right?
Like I'll take that and I'll be like, all right, I can use that with this client. Or
so photography you do because that's your hobby.
Yeah.
And swimming you do because you're a USMS level 2 swim coach and you are always on there. And I see it. You're trying to, you know, advance your knowledge and your own skills because Tim's side hustle is you teach children how to swim. You do stroke development with kids who are on swim team or trying to get on club swim or wanting to improve their stroke. You teach adults how to swim.
Yeah.
And you have a triathlon swim group at night. So, you know, swim is definitely your side hustle. And I didn't know you did that though in the mornings because I'm usually still upstairs doing my prayer meditation. You're down here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know you did
But that. It's nice, but it was intentional. It was like, it's like, okay, to gain more knowledge, you need to spend time doing it. And like, that's my
intentional.
That's my time.
Okay. You know? And so that everyone is our next episode is we are going to get into intention and we're going to get into being intentional because that's that's another conversation that I think is important to talk about for coaching. And it's something that is integral to your success in life. So we're going to stay tuned for the next episode with Tim and I, because we're talking all about intention. Cool. Okay. So really think about, you know, if you scored low in openness, really try to introduce those small changes. If you scored low on conscientiousness, work on improving your organization and time management skills. Set small, achievable goals and gradually increase their complexity. Okay. So, you know, maybe you want to get better with being more organized and managing your time. You can do that by, you know, get a calendar, get a scheduler, use your phone. Many people like to use their phone. Really get intentional about using that phone. I have old school paper planner and I can't live without it. And I'm intentional about it. Here's the thing. When you get more organized and you have better time management skills, which I think really is something to learn, that's what we call them, skills. It is a skill. I teach this in my coaching programs to my clients. You may find your conscientiousness goes up and you're more thoughtful of others because you have the mental bandwidth to be more thoughtful of others. Does that make sense? Like when you're organized, you're like, oh wait, I'm done at 3 o'clock because I got it all done.
Right.
I can now go to the store and pick up those flowers and drop them off for so-and-so who's sick. I can now run through Panera. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set that order. I'm going to run through Panera and I'm going to get whatever, that meal for so-and-so. I can go visit so-and-so who's a shut-in. I'm going to call or text her. I'm going to see if I can come visit her and I'll just stay for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you see how they all run into each other? When we get better at managing our time and we're conscientious about it, now we can start to think about others.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it should be spoken to that like it doesn't matter what means you use to be organized, right? Like you, because like even you just said, well, I use my book and I use my this and that. I mean, there's so many different ways and there's no wrong way. It's just a way that works good or the best for you as a person, right?
I have, you know, my clients tend to, they are of two minds. I mean, I would say it's almost split, you know, half of them are, their calendars are in their phones. They can't live without their phones. It's all on their phone. If it's not in there, it's like it's never was said. It didn't happen. And I'd say the other half of us are with paper calendars, where if it's not written in there, if I don't write it down when I make the commitment to do it, it's like, it's just not, it's not good. Like I have to write it down right away or I will forget. So it doesn't matter how you do it. It doesn't, you know, I don't care so much about that.
Just do it.
But just do it. Just do it. Right.
Because
right.
For me, so like for my work, my actual job and things that are related to it, that's all done through Outlook. So that's all electronic. That's on my laptop. That's on my phone. Right. But like if I look at my world with like clients, whether it's dry land or it's in the water, a lot of times I put that on a whiteboard. Like I actually have a whiteboard with the calendar on it.
I see it. Right.
And then if I'm like, if I look at my daily...
you do it different. I haven't thought about that. You do put your schedule on a whiteboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because I like to just like look at it and be like, okay, there we go. There's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
You're
done.
Real visual.
Got it
learner.
All. Yeah. And like if I look at my daily, my goals for the day or my task list for the day, I have a whole nother book and I'll write down, I open it up, take a fresh page and I'll write down, all right, today there's like 9 things. And you know how I do it because I did this for all the kids. I'll put a little box next to each one of them. And throughout the day, I have to make sure I get to all of them and I have to check all those boxes. And I won't go to bed until all those boxes are checked.
That works for you.
It works for me. And it's old school, but it works.
Doesn't matter what it is as long as it works for you. That's the point I think we're trying to make here, right? Yeah. Okay, so next, if you scored low in extroversion, if you're not the most extroverted person, so this is a time for you to really think about, do I want to challenge myself to socialize more? Maybe you could start with small, comfortable gatherings, you know, where you can gradually increase your comfortableness in being in groups of people. And then from there, you can move into larger gatherings. So, but you got to start somewhere. So think about a small gathering group that you could go to. Maybe it's a networking event that, you know, and just go. Maybe there's 5 women, 10 women, that doesn't feel so small, or mixed men and women. 10 might feel a lot for you. So what else can you do? Maybe you join a group at your church or your synagogue, or, you know, where, if you worship formally somewhere, join something. Think about, maybe it's volunteering, and maybe, you know, I know that there's volunteer opportunities around here where you're volunteering. There's one other person there with you, you know, like we're doing for the migrants. And before that was for the Ukrainian refugees that were coming over. There was, and it's actually is in a church, but it's non-denominational, and they need people to come because people are dropping off all kinds of clothing and household items to furnish apartments for these individuals. And you're usually, you get on a schedule and you're with one other person. So if you're low on your extroversion, that could be a great way. And that's going to be somewhere in your community. Okay. That's a great way to meet one person. And that feel for people may feel very manageable. I can do that. I can go and I can talk to one person, and we're focused on doing something like organizing clothing, children's clothing from adult, you know, adult women's clothing. I can do that and kind of chit chat. It's the fear of being in a, you know, we all think about the quintessential, is the fear of going to a cocktail party and having a drink in your hand and not knowing anybody and you don't know what to talk about. That's what freaks a lot of people out. Okay.
Yeah.
So start small and go from, and get bigger from there.
That's fascinating stuff. Cause I'm just thinking about myself. Like I don't have a problem. Like I could easily stand up in front of hundreds of people.
Yeah.
I don't get nervous with anything about
that's
that.
That's why you're not a true introvert, I don't think.
But yet there's times where I'm just like, I don't really want to, and maybe that's just going, maybe I'm just in my head about it. Like, I don't need to have that idle chit chat in a smaller group setting. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird. Like, I'm like on both sides of this thing, and I don't know.
You're in the middle.
I am in the middle.
Yeah.
I am totally in the middle.
You don't need to do it. You don't always want to do it.
I'm good with being like listening to conversation and interacting.
You're that way mostly.
Interjecting, but you're, like, I don't need to have that spotlight. There's no desire for that.
Well, I don't think that, but that's a bit of a, that spotlight is a bit of a, I think of that as in a narcissistic way.
Yeah.
Not everybody who's an extrovert is a narcissist. So that's really important to say.
Yeah, true.
We're talking too much about narcissism today and people are getting it wrong. I have to say that. It's a trending topic. Everybody thinks everybody else that's done them wrong is a narcissist. It's not accurate. Not everybody who's done you wrong or a bad breakup or a bad boss, maybe they're just a bad boss, it's a bad breakup and, you know, they weren't a great girlfriend or boyfriend, doesn't mean they're a narcissist. So, you know, extroverts love to talk. They love to meet new people. But what extroverts get from it is that they get the feedback. So extroverts want the dialogue. Now, if you're a narcissist, all you care about is yourself and how you look and, you know, how smart I am, how right I am, how beautiful I am, how amazing I look and am in this moment. That's a narcissist. Extroverts are not so much that way. Extroverts, yeah, they have healthy egos. There's nothing wrong with a healthy ego.
Yeah.
But extroverts really get a lot from the feedback they get from others. So extroverts, it's a back and forth. Now, so that's an aside that I have to say because it's driving me and, you know, crazy because I hear a lot of people on social media talking about, well, everywhere I hear it these days, like they're a narcissist. I'm like, are they though? Are they really narcissists? Now, it's very normal to have narcissistic tendencies from time to time. That's like being egotistical. And I want everybody to have a healthy ego. I'll never forget my former supervisor 25, 30 years ago when I worked in eating disorders, the director of the program said, we all have narcissism. We all have narcissistic tendencies. That's actually the sign of a healthy ego. That's very different. 2%, 1%, 2% of the population actually has a narcissistic personality disorder. That's a personality disorder, which is almost no one has that. Now you have features of narcissism. Some people have it more than others, but it's okay to be somebody who at times is concerned about how you look. That's okay. Just keep that in check. All right. But what you're talking about is you say, I'm not somebody who has to speak. But what I'm thinking is the people who do like to speak, the people who do like to talk, they're not narcissistic. They're just more talkative than you. You are someone who, you really are a wonderful listener. You will sit and observe and you take in all that's going on around you. And you're also, Tim, and I know many people like this, you're not going to compete to talk, especially when you're around a bunch of talkative people. You know, you're not going to do that. You're like, yep, don't care to do that. Like we said earlier, you are not competitive in that way and you're not challenging in that way. Now, if the conversation lulls or someone asks you a question, you will answer the question. And if the conversation dies down, you will talk. I've noticed that you will talk. And if anyone's one-on-one with you or two other people with you, you're very talkative.
Yeah.
You're in the conversation.
Yeah.
But you're not going to compete for airtime.
No.
It's just not your personality. You don't care to do it.
I don't have that need to be that.
Which I think is great.
Yeah. And I think, so I just learned something. So I think that for me, I've always, not always, but like I think in my head, I've thought like I don't need to be overly talkative and loud because I don't want to be perceived as the one who's like the know-it-all, like, you know what I mean? That needs to,
I don't think you would ever be perceived that way.
Right. But I think, ever. I think that fuels my listening sometimes.
Why? Because you've seen people like that?
Yeah.
You're turned off by it.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that makes me a little like, ooh, I don't want to be perceived as that.
Well, I'm probably more that way. Mm. I'm more talkative than you are.
Oh.
Especially when I get around other, like my family members.
Yeah,
we're all
trying
to talk.
Yeah.
But
it's not a bad thing.
No, it's just
I think it's just what's going on inside my head. That's it.
Right,
you know what I mean?
That's interesting. I didn't know that you.
Yeah. I don't even know that I knew it until like right now when you're talking about this, you know?
That's interesting.
I never thought of it this way.
Yeah. I think of you as just someone who you don't care. You won't engage. You are very much listening. I can see your mind is working. You very much are listening to the conversation if there's a debate going on, but you are not going to fight for airtime. You're just not doing it, which I think is appealing to many people who watch you. You know, and because when they're with you one-on-one or, two-on-one with you, you'll talk. You have thoughts, but you're not going to, you're not competing.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
There you go.
Side note.
All right, yeah. Okay, so where are we at? Okay, the last one is, if you're high in neuroticism, you need to focus on stress management techniques such as mindfulness, exercise. Working out really does help with neuroticism because it helps with stress management. And this is a time where you really need to, if you can't do this on your own, because this can be a hard one, you do need to seek outside consultation or help with it. You know, you can work with a therapist if it's a deep one that there, it can get, I don't like to use the word pathological, but if it's, there are times when you need a therapist. There are also times, I see a lot of neurotic clients and they're my coaching clients. You know, we speak openly about it, but, you know, I think most of this can be done with the coach. Why would you see a therapist? I think you need to see a therapist if your stress management is so poor that now you've gotten to the point where your anxiety is so poor that now you're having anxiety attacks. Maybe you're highly depressed. Maybe this is something you put off for years. Now you're in burnout. Now you're actually in a clinical depression where you need to be in psychotherapy and you might need some med management with a consultation with a psychiatrist. So that's where it's gone too far. Probably something that should have been treated 2 years ago. You didn't. And now you need to be seeing a psychotherapist. For the people who are like, yeah, I'm neurotic, coaching could work really well for you. You know, you're not in a clinical depression. You're not having panic attacks or anxiety attacks. But you just need to get back on track with, you know, some kind of body movement system. You need to get some mindfulness going. You need some meditation going. You need to just get back to bettering your resilience skills. And that's what this is about, you know. And I think that being neurotic, it's okay. Like I said earlier, I'm neurotic, but it's learning how to regulate our emotions. It's really about emotion regulation, regulating those emotions, knowing when you're going like too high up, like you said in another episode, going too high up. Okay, bring that down. How do you bring that down? And many people don't know how to do that. And that's what I do, is I teach the skills to help you emotionally regulate.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think another thing that you could kind of dip into here too is maybe into your creative side, right? Like maybe to kind of like calm you down. Like maybe it's art, maybe it's craft,
yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
It's, you know,
yeah.
something where it's like, it's you and you, right? It's just you and you're doing
journaling.
Something that
yes.
kind of gets your mind off of a lot of other things.
Well, I encourage journaling all the time with, you know, the people I work with. Journaling, we know, absolutely helps.
Yeah.
There's something, and not on your phone, not on your computer, pen to paper, I always tell my clients, go get a nice new journal, go get some great pens that you're excited about, make it like a little ritual and start writing. There's something about that medium. Things come out and hit different when you're writing it down. Okay. I also have to say, and I don't talk about this enough, but I am always amazed when I have worked with art therapists. This is mostly when I worked in inpatient, in day program, in psych units and eating disorders. Those art therapists are amazing. And even those who are like, I'm not a creative, I'm not artistic, everybody would have to go to therapy and I would observe and watch them. And I got to participate a couple of times. What comes out in art therapy, in a paintbrush, a watercolor, or paints, or drawing is fascinating. That's another way to really help you emotionally regulate.
Yeah.
Okay. That helps with our level of neuroticism. I didn't think about that. So yeah. That's a great, glad you brought up.
Because I think like for me, like I'll grab a camera. Like if I'm like, if I just need a little bit of chill time,
yeah.
Sometimes, like, and I don't do it a lot. I just like doing it. I'd do it every day if I could, but like, sometimes I do it intentionally, where I'll like grab a camera and I'll be like, "All right, I'll be back," and I'm gonna just like walk out in the woods.
I think it's very therapeutic,
right?
For you.
And you just like you're looking around and like, you know, you're trying to like get yourself to find your eye again and, you know, find that picture, right? And it's like, but at the same time, you're like completely away from the world and chilled.
Yes.
You know?
And you're in nature. Absolutely. All right. We gotta move this forward because I've got a full day of seeing clients. We gotta move this forward. Okay. So what are you going to do? Here are the strategies to make the changes. Okay. So you're going to develop a plan. You could do, you know, the SMART goals, where you create specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound goals. We call those SMART goals, related to the traits that you want to develop or change based on what we just went through. You need to seek feedback. I think feedback is very important. So swallow your pride, eat humble pie, go to people that you trust, that you feel psychological safety with. That could be your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your spouse, your friends, an extended family member, professionals, colleagues that you trust. Go to them and ask them for honest feedback about your personality traits and where you can improve. Okay. So number one, you've got to have psychological safety. You don't go to people who are going to be mean to you and be evil and like rub their hands together like, ha ha, here's my opportunity to go after him or her. No, no, no. That's not your person. But there are people in your life that you trust that you can go to and say, I'd love feedback. I'm doing this work. I'm doing some personal development. I'm doing some self-coaching here. Can you tell me how I'm doing, how you see me in the world? So, so important. And believe me, that will have a huge impact on you. The people who I've done that with, I've made changes. I remember everything about those conversations because they're hard ones. I'm not going to say that's blind spot work. They're hard ones, but I made changes and they're permanent changes because you'll never forget the feedback you get. Okay. So that's really important. And number three, educate yourself. Start reading books. Start going to workshops. Seek coaching. If you want to advance this in a much faster way, hire a coach. You hire me or hire someone. Hire a coach for yourself that really can give you insights and give you strategies for you in your life, for your situation. Okay. You know, the best coaches have coaches, the best therapists have therapists. I say this all the time. So that's something I think that all of you who are interested in it, you ought to be asking. You have a therapist? I think it's appropriate to ask them if they're in therapy. You're vetting out your life coach, you're getting on a discovery call with them, ask them if they're being coached. Very important. Okay. I can't tell you, you know, what I have learned and what I'm continuing to learn with my coaches. All right. And then the last part of this. So we just went through implementing the strategies for making changes, develop a plan, seek feedback, educate yourself. Number four, practice, 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 practice. And this goes into the title of my podcast, Badass Confidence Coach. Practice is what's going to get you confident. The only way that you get confidence in your life is by practicing, falling, failing, fail forward. You skin your knees, get up, wipe yourself off, and keep moving forward. That's practice. Okay. So it's making consistent efforts, looking at your personality traits, the notes you took from these two episodes, go back and look at them, consistently work on them, and reflecting, how did I do? How did I do today? How did I do this past week? And then adjusting. Okay, I didn't do so well there. That neuroticism of mine, I'm totally neurotic. I got to work on that. I got to continue to improve. It's all okay. Just keep moving forward. You're going to screw up. We all do. I do. I'm not perfect. Tim, you're not perfect. There's no perfection here. It's just keeping your eye on the ball, moving forward, getting towards that finish line. You will get there. But like I said, eat some humble pie, swallow your pride, and keep moving. You're not always right. We're not always right. And that's not the goal of this. This is just to improve ourselves. Okay. And then, you know, the last one I would say is leverage your strengths. You've got strengths in all of this. As you've gone through this, you've got some things you're like, oh no, I'm really good at that. I'm good at that. I'm conscientious. I'm not neurotic. I'm low on that. I'm a really calm person. I think I'm pretty resilient. You know, I may need to work on, you know, my agreeableness. I'm not always the most agreeable person. So, you know, just remember though that you do have strengths in all of this. And, you know, for instance, if you're naturally conscientious of others, use that to your advantage in planning and executing your personal development journey. Okay. Yeah. So you got strengths, use those too.
I think it's important to be aware, to analyze yourself, right? And to identify what the strengths are, right? Because sometimes we don't think about that stuff. We're always like, oh, I wish I could be better at fill in the blank, but we don't lean on the stuff that we're really good at. It's a good point.
And that it is a good point that you just brought up. And I want to say this with, you know, underscoring for this entire past two episodes, we're talking about ways to improve based on the big five personality traits. Please, everybody, remember, we tend to be very negative and we remember the negative about ourselves. That's not the point of this. There are so many wonderful things about you and your personality. You have so many gifts and so many positive attributes. Please remember those too, okay? This is all about developing and improving what we need to improve upon.
Yeah.
And also remember, you have so much the world needs to see. You've got that we don't see yet, and you've got a lot to offer. There's a lot of things about you that I think that we tend to, I know I do it. I know my clients do it. There's a lot of good stuff in there too. Okay.
Totally.
So use those strengths as well. All right. So if you found this to be of value, please rate, review with 5 stars, leave a 1 or 2 sentence review. It makes all the difference in the world. And, you know, share this episode, share the podcast with people who you think might grow from it. And if you want to work with me, reach out to me, hello@annamarkaline.com. Let's get on a call together and see if I would be a good fit for you. And mad love. Until next time, everyone, be well. Thanks for joining me on the Badass Confidence Coach podcast. Remember, you're capable of so much more than you think. If you're ready to step into your power and take control of your life, it's time to make that change. If you want to work with me as your personal life coach, email me. You'll find that down below in the show notes. Together, let's unlock your full potential. Until next time, stay confident and keep kicking ass.